everyone. Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Harris and Trump face off in a critical debate. Our Spotlight Politics team on what to expect. Illinois' plan to enforce gun laws and stop the flow of illegal firearms.
Illinois is one of 10 states, plus Washington, D.C., with a so-called assault weapons ban on the books.
Exploring the details of Illinois' assault weapons ban. And Mayor Johnson announces a city hiring freeze and limits on overtime to help close a nearly billion-dollar budget gap. And now to some of today's top stories. Presidential candidates Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are set to face off for a much-anticipated debate tonight. The two campaigns agreed to use the same rules and format as the June debate between Trump and Joe Biden. That means microphones will once again be muted unless a candidate is speaking. There will be no audience and candidates will not be allowed to question each other directly. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker had some words of advice today for Harris.
The guy on the other side of the stage is a lying liar who lies constantly. And as you know, a lie can travel halfway around the globe before the truth puts on its shoes. So she's got to, number one, make sure that she's giving her plan. And second, making sure that she's dismissing the lies that are coming out of him.
Tonight's debate airs on ABC at 8 p.m. Central Time. We'll have more on that with our Spotlight Politics team later in the program. 1,200 men, women, and children living in three of the city's migrant shelters will be moving out before the end of next month as the city's crisis enters a new phase. The city says it'll be closing the shelters in Pilsen and the West Loop by October 1st. A third shelter in Hyde Park will be closed by October 24th. All of the residents will be moved to one of 14 other city-operated shelters across the city. The shelter's closure means 3,000 fewer beds, but city officials say there will still be 2,000 available across Chicago in case of another surge before the presidential election. Another compounding negative impact from the city's much-criticized parking meter deal. A report from Chicago's Inspector General says the city has failed to do enough to make sure the company, Chicago Parking Meters, is hiring minority and women-owned businesses for at least 25% of annual operating expenses. The IG says Chicago Parking Meters improperly claimed credit for a minority women-owned business that turns out was not MBE certified. IG Deborah Witzberg says the shortfall isn't because of misconduct, but poor management. City says it'll take steps to correct the issue. To find out how Chicago's infamous parking meter deal came to be, check out our website at WTTW.com/explains. Up next, we explain the state's ban on assault weapons right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The mother of the alleged Georgia school shooter said today she's set to talk with investigators on Thursday. This after last week's shooting at Appalachee High School that left two students and two teachers dead. Violence involving guns is an ongoing problem around the country and here in Chicago. Certain types of guns have been especially under the microscope, tied to the country's persistent mass shootings. We begin our focus on guns this evening with a look at action taken by the Illinois legislature. Here's Amanda Vinicky.
Whenever there's talk about how to curb gun violence, two words often come up. Assault weapons. It's a loaded term. Those who own them consider it a meaningless classification, deployed for political purposes. To critics, they signify guns literally meant for war. Illinois is one of 10 states, plus Washington, D.C., with a so-called assault weapons ban on the books. While the intention of the term may not be universally agreed upon, Illinois has a definition. It's spelled out in the Protect Illinois Communities Act, a 2023 state law that bans assault weapons from being purchased, sold, or owned in Illinois. There is an exception, though. Anyone who legally owned banned guns before the law took effect can keep them. Illinois' definition is thorough, and the list of guns that meet the criteria is constantly evolving. At a high level, the law describes an assault weapon as a semi-automatic firearm with the capacity to fire a lot of rounds quickly. That includes AR-15-style guns, like those used in the mass shooting in suburban Highland Park, as well as in Uvalde, Texas, Buffalo, New York, and elsewhere. The law prohibits high-capacity magazines as well, defining them as anything with at least 10 rounds of ammunition for long guns, 15 for handguns. Of course, there are ways to buy a gun illegally or to modify a legal firearm into one that's more high-powered and thus illegal. And the availability of so-called assault weapons in other states, including all of Illinois' neighbors, means that such guns make their way into Illinois, ban or not, which is, of course, also illegal. Gun rights advocates say they shouldn't have to contend with such limitations, that the Second Amendment protects their right to bear arms, including AR-15s. Whether Illinois' law is constitutional is a question the U.S. Supreme Court is likely to settle.
And you can see more of our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains, on our website. And we have more on the movement of illegal guns and the fight to stop it right after this.
Chicago Tonight's coverage of public safety is supported by the Su Ling Jin Charitable Foundation Initiative for Reducing Violence in Chicago.
As you've heard, Illinois has some of the nation's strictest gun laws. However, firearm legislation in neighboring states has a significant impact on Illinois. Despite all the restrictions and regulations in place, illegal gun trafficking still poses a problem. Here to talk more about gun violence issues and potential solutions are Kobe Williams, director of Cure Violence Global, a public safety initiative that treats violence as a health epidemic. Kim Smith, director of National Programs and External Engagement at the University of Chicago Crime Lab and Education Lab. And Christopher Ammon, special agent in charge for the ATF Chicago Field Division. Thanks, all of you, for joining us. So, special agent, let's start with you, please. Last week, we know that the Chicago Police Department said so far this year, almost 8,500 illegal guns have been taken off the streets. That is slightly ahead of where we were this time last year, according to their numbers. Set the stage for us. From your perspective, how would you describe or qualify the flow of illegal guns in Illinois?
So it's constant. It's a constant problem. However, it's one that's growing. So I think we're on track this year for more than 12,000 firearm recoveries here in the city of Chicago. These are crime guns, so meaning these are guns that are recovered in the commission of a crime or by somebody who's not allowed to have those firearms. So one of the things we do at ATF is collaborate on this problem to try to stop that flow, but also to address the violent crime, so to address the shooter. Unfortunately, you have too many of both. You have too many illegal guns flowing into Chicago, and then you have a group of people who are willing to use them to inflict damage against our citizens. So at ATF, public safety is paramount. So we work with our partners, the Chicago Police Department, federal, state, and local agencies to try to go after the shooters and their sources of crime guns.
Kim Smith, what do we know about where these guns are coming from?
We've looked at the data a few times, partnered with the Chicago Police Department, the City of Chicago Mayor's Office, really trying to understand where are these guns coming from. Because as the special agent said, every year thousands of guns are recovered in Chicago, but there are no gun stores. So when we look at the data, we see that 40% of illegal firearms actually originate from Illinois, a lot of them from suburban Cook County, but 60% are coming from other states, neighboring states. So there's both an interstate and then an intrastate dynamic.
The city did some research on this in 2014 and 2017. Are there plans to continue this research?
I don't know. I think that's really up to the city leadership, but I will say that the work that was done in 2014 and 2017, I think, is something that many other cities and states even have looked to and replicated. So I would hope to see a continuation of that in the future.
So it sounds like something that would be useful then for the work that the folks at the table here that are sitting here do.
It's people, who care a lot about data. We think that more data is generally a good thing. It helps us understand the scope of the problem and opportunities to improve the status quo.
Kobe, you've written a book, Interrupting Violence. You tell your own story from, going from being a leader in a notorious gang to leading advocacy work for violence intervention and the work that you do today. What did you see, or what do you know as far as why people carry guns and how they get them?
I mean, I think, you know, growing up in the community where we grew up at, guns was like more like a protection, you know, just to have it. You know, and our mindset and our thinking was always we'd rather get caught with it than without it. So now when I look now, 30 years later, guns and violence is making our country sick. So we got to do more. So when I say do more, I think we got to continue to invest more money into violence prevention programs, CVF work in the community and all over, because I look at the person like myself and a lot of my colleagues and everybody who I work with all over the world who are doing violence prevention. We see a big impact in reducing shooting and killing in the community. We really see that every day. I look at a person like myself who was in prison, now went from prison to a public speaker, went for sentences, now being a success story. So it's all about investing more in the community, investing more with the brothers and sisters in this field every day, because they're making a big difference to reduce shooting and killing in the communities every day. And I think that don't be talked about enough, though.
Special Agent Ammon, talk to us, if you would, about crime gun intelligence. What is that, and how does it work in Chicago?
So there's two main tenets of our crime gun intelligence strategy. As I mentioned earlier, the first is to address those pulling the trigger, and the second is the sources of crime guns. To achieve that, ATF uses two important databases, our e-trace system that allows us to trace a firearm when it's recovered back to the original point of sale, so we can identify that point of diversion. So when it went from a legal commerce stream to illegal commerce, it was recovered during a crime. Second is our NIBIN system, and this helps us link shootings throughout Chicago and throughout the region and throughout the country. So this helps us recover cartridge cases at crime scenes, enter them into a network of millions of images that connect the shootings. So what we try to do there is focus our efforts on those who are possessing and using guns that are used in other shootings. So we're able to look at that that small population of those who are actually pulling the trigger, as opposed to those that may be possessing guns for other reasons. And what we find from the data, I mentioned those 12,000 gun recoveries in Chicago, about 20% are linked ballistically to another shooting. So what we do at our Crime Gun Intelligence Center with our partners every day is we're focusing on that population that needs the attention of federal, state, and local law enforcement with our limited resources.
So can that technology, it sounds like it can help you solve crimes committed with guns and take them off the streets. Can it deter gun trafficking?
Absolutely. So one of the things we're doing, we're tracing that gun. We're focusing ATF also, in addition to our criminal enforcement mission, we regulate the firearms industry as well. So we regulate federally licensed firearms dealers across the country. So again, being intelligence-based means that we have to focus our efforts on the crime guns that are being supplied and sourced. Crime gun intelligence helps us focus our efforts, too, on federal firearms licensees that we need to inspect who may be sources of crime guns, individuals who may be sources of crime guns who are dealing without a license outside of that whole process. So really what crime gun intelligence does is it helps us focus our effort, helps us solve crime, and make sure that we're focusing on the right people for federal enforcement.
Kim, based on your research, what are some of the kind of scary and startling trends that you all have been noticing with regards to casings, fatality rates?
My colleagues, Jacob Miller and Jens Ludwig, released some research earlier this year and shed light on the increasing fatality rate in the city of Chicago. So what that means is there are thousands of shootings every year. Some of them are homicides, and the likelihood that a shooting turns into a homicide has increased. We've also seen an increase in the number of shell casings that Chicago police is recovering. 10 years ago, 1% of shooting incidents would have 20 or more, shell casings. But last year, 16% of the crime scenes, shooting crime scenes that Chicago police responded to, had 20 or more shell casings. We've also seen an increase in the number of Glock switches that Chicago PD is recovering. So that means that you can transform a semi-automatic firearm into a firearm that can, you know, let out 100 rounds without reloading at machine gun pace. So there are a lot of really troubling trends on the horizon.
Kobe, I'm going to let you have the last word almost, because we've got about a minute left. Obviously, community violence intervention is something that you certainly advocate a lot for. Is there room for, you know, collaboration between the work that you do and law enforcement? Because I know there's not always a lot of community trust there.
Yeah, but I think everybody got a role to play, you know, and I think it's important, though, for, you know, a lot of places, like I see not just in Chicago, but other places. It's important for, you know, some places, law enforcement, you know, let us do what we got to do our part. But when they step into it, we know to step back, though, because we try to focus on stopping the shooting and killing on the front end before it happened. Once it happened, when law enforcement step in, they got the job to do like we got the job to do. But we focus on changing mindsets and change behavior before it would take place. So I think it's important for everybody to do their role, but it is a thin line where, you know, our credibility is everything. So to have that trust in this community, we got to have that trust where people would listen to us or where they will come talk to us. And I ain't saying about if they created a crime or did this or did that, but have that trust where we could try to help change their thinking. And that's what we try to do every day.
A lot of work cut out for the folks at the table. Thanks to all three of you for joining us, Special Agent Christopher Ammon, Kimberly Smith, Kobe Williams. Thanks, everybody. Up next, what we might expect at tonight's debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and much more right after this. Might be the mid-80s outside, but they're feeling a deep freeze at City Hall this week as Mayor Brandon Johnson announces a hiring freeze to help close a big budget gap. The mayor's belt-tightening strategy comes amid a record-breaking jury award in a wrongful conviction lawsuit. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg, and there may or may not be a presidential debate tonight that we'll have to talk with.
Oh, man.
I hadn't heard.
Details.
But let's start with the city, because in a statement today, Mayor Johnson, or I guess it was a statement from his budget director yesterday, the city announced cost-cutting measures to deal with the city's massive budget gap. Heather, savings strategies that stood out to you?
So they are not going to find $223 million in savings from putting a hiring freeze on and curtailing overtime. That's not how this works. But it will send a message, right, that this is a very serious financial crisis and that the city is prepared to tighten its belt before it asks taxpayers to dig into their pockets a little bit deeper. It also sends, I think, a message to the Chicago Public School District, because most of this year's budget is because they refused to make a $175 million pension payment. So this is a little bit, perhaps, of gamesmanship, telling CPS, hey, you didn't do this, and now there is this consequence, and it's going to be a little bit of back and forth for the next couple of months.
Maybe they'll find the $223 million in couch cushions.
It's worth a look.
It's worth, amazing. I mean, I should start looking, too. Any idea how long this hiring freeze and the overtime limits could last?
So I think at least until the end of the year, because the city has to sort of get this year's budget out of the black by December 31st. Oh, and they've got to deal with a $982 million projected deficit for 2025, also by the end of the year. So until that is all figured out, the city's going to put away the credit card for a little while.
Nick, do you think this could be just the first of more belt-tightening moves down the road?
Absolutely. I mean, in the mayor's budget forecast, they laid out a bunch of different options, trying to find operational expenses that they could pay for with grants, obviously cuts to programs and services, talking about delaying certain projects. But, you know, the issue here is that there are only so many things you can do. You can institute a freeze. You can raise, you know, taxes and fees. You can issue bonds. You can refinance debt. You can sell assets, but you only get to sell them once. And as we saw with the parking meter deal, that can be very unpopular. So there's not a lot on the table, and state aid isn't looking particularly likely, it sounds like.
Yeah, Nick, they asked the governor about this today because there has been this notion. Well, all right, well, we'll ask the state, both on the city side as well as coming up with additional money for CPS, something that we've heard the mayor, the teachers union president clamor for. And the governor really making clear that ain't going to be happening. He said, first of all, he has not yet been asked by the Johnson administration. No requests been made, but he said that the notion that the city is going to receive supplemental funding from Illinois ain't going to happen.
Not happening, folks. One thing that is adding to the city's expenses, of course, though, is paying settlements and jury awards for law enforcement misconduct. Heather, the jury awarding a record-breaking amount to a man who was wrongfully convicted or wrongfully imprisoned for 10 years. Tell us about this case.
So this case dates all the way back to 2008, where an 18-year-old man, Marcel Brown, was arrested and convicted in connection with a murder. Now, he says that he wasn't there, that he didn't fire the gun and that he didn't know who did, but he ended up implicating himself in the case after being interrogated for more than 5 hours and being held for more than 36 hours, even as his mother hired an attorney and tried to get that attorney in to speak with him. That led to his conviction being overturned and him getting a certificate of innocence, and this led to this massive jury verdict, which is significantly more than really any other jury verdict we've seen ever involving a single plaintiff. For example, the most recent wrongful conviction settlement approved by the city council was for $22 million, and that man had spent decades in prison. So this case really illustrates the stark just roll of the dice that the city takes when they take these kind of cases to federal juries, because any lawyer will tell you, I'm not a lawyer, but I sometimes play one on TV, sure, will tell you, you never quite know what a jury is going to do. Now, the city's law department says they're assessing their options. They can certainly appeal and attempt to negotiate a settlement that will sort of end this litigation. However, the last time the city lost a case like this, that jury verdict of $21 million was upheld.
Okay. Amanda, former AT&T executive Paul Sciatza's trial began today. What are prosecutors alleging, and how might his trial impact the Madigan trial?
Well, so this is all has to do with bribery surrounding Madigan, allegedly, and Paul Sciatza says that he is not guilty of this, but he basically is accused of funneling money, let's say a ghost payroll to a lobbyist, really, to curry favor with the former Illinois House Speaker as Sciatza was seeking legislation that was ultimately passed and became law over a veto by then-Governor Bruce Rauner that would save AT&T millions of dollars by no longer mandating that they keep up landlines when they say everybody uses these cell phones, so they shouldn't have to do that sort of thing. So what is key in this case is, first of all, just watching what arguments are made here, because we know that in October, this is going to be something that is brought up in the Madigan trial. It's also key because this is really the first case since the U.S. Supreme Court changed the definitions that we're working with in terms of what is considered bribery. Sciatza, again, says that he didn't do it under the old definition or the new, but that we're going to have new instructions, really, that the jury is going to have to follow. So this is quite the preview.
Okay. So following last week's very tragic school shooting in Georgia, seeing new efforts in Illinois to strengthen gun storage laws in homes with children, Nick, update us on this. It's the Safe Firearm Storage Act. Who's behind it? Who's opposing it?
Well, this is, you know, an effort from Democrats in the Illinois legislature to tighten the rules. Right now, if there's someone 13 or younger, guns have to be locked up if they're in the house. There was a measure floated in the spring by Democrats in the General Assembly to say they have to be locked up, period. That got pushed back from the NRA, from the, you know, far-right Illinois Freedom Alliance, from the Illinois Sheriff's Association, which also opposed the assault weapons ban. Now this has been tweaked to just be, you know, young people 18 and younger. Sponsors are hoping to have an updated version of the bill ready to go either in the veto session this fall, perhaps in January. Certainly a lot of attention around this because of the recent school shooting in Georgia. Also important context to note that, you know, young people dying by firearm suicides is also a huge issue. There was a Brady Center report from a few years ago that found since 2006 that's been up drastically among boys and young men at a rate far higher than the overall population, easy access to firearms being a huge part of that.
Okay, so 30 seconds left. A little bit of a partisan divide over how people are going to view tonight's presidential debate. Real quick, I'm just going to throw this out. You pick it up. What you keeping an eye on tonight?
Well, it's going to be the first time for many people to see Kamala Harris in this kind of a debate. Of course, she debated back in 2020. I don't remember 2020. I'm sure most Americans do not.
I don't remember
August.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of it.
And this, of course, is going to be one-on-one with Donald Trump. And he is well known for sort of how he treated Hillary Clinton during the 2016 debates. So there's going to be a clear contrast, I would imagine.
And how much he keeps up from his last debate with Joe Biden in comparison in terms of how he treats Harris.
I'm listening for Chicago attacks. That's what I'm always listening for.
Are you going to do a shot every time? I'm kidding. All right, that's Spotlight. Thanks, gang. Heather Sharone, Nick Blumberg, Amanda Vinicky. And if you're looking for even more backstory on these topics and other issues, be sure to check out our newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. You can subscribe at WTTW.com/newsletter. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Be sure to stay tuned to WTTW tonight at 8 for live coverage of the presidential debate. And don't miss us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. It's become a hot issue in the race for president, the high cost of childcare, and what can be done about it. And we explore what's on the table for this year's Black Restaurant Week. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.